If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
The Philadelphia Eagles are Super Bowl champions. Eagles fans everywhere, this is for you. Let the celebration begin.
It's warm inside. It's cold outside, Rube.
It's the mid-30s by now, but I don't see anything melting. How much snow did you get down there in lovely South Jersey?
It's still snowing. I'm looking outside my window now. It's still coming down. I did half of the shoveling yesterday. I'm going to try to finish up a little bit tonight and then tomorrow morning.
So you're doing shifts, huh?
Well, otherwise, it's this heavy snow, and it's like a sheet of ice, so you kind of have to. You know what I do when I shovel? I throw my my headphones on or my earbuds on, and I listen to like Bob Marley or like some reggae. I try to like think warm thoughts. Doesn't work.
A little island music.
Right, I try. This is the Eagle Eye Podcast presented by the Locker Room app, a place for live audio conversations about the sports you care about with Ruben Frank. I'm Dave Zangaro.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Rube, we have a jam-packed show. We want to get into the blockbuster trade that happened over the weekend between the Rams and Lions, and maybe the implications that has when you look at the Eagles situation at quarterback. The coaching staff in Philadelphia continuing to come together. It's a really young coaching staff. Some of the coaches just came knocking on my door asking to shovel the driveway for $20. We're getting into some of those guys. We'll look at Doug's assistant coaches. Some of those people are still looking for jobs. And Nick Sirianni has had a couple interviews since his introductory press conference, and they've gone considerably better than that intro press conference. But I wanted to start off with the Goff-Stafford trade. Major deal. I mean, it was kind of a shocker on Saturday evening. What was your initial reaction? And did you immediately think, oh, if this trade can get done?
Yeah, that was my initial reaction. Well, if these guys can pull it off. And, you think about what goes into a trade like that and the logistics. And for them to get that done so early in the offseason, so quickly, was shocking to me. You hear they're talking. Usually you hear like they're working on it. Now one side's kind of doesn't want to do it. Now the other side doesn't. There's not enough there for them. This thing just happened. And obviously it can't officially happen until March, but it's a done deal. And yeah, that was my initial reaction was if they can start trading these guys, there's no reason the Eagles can't. And, we spent so much time talking about the cap implications and just how huge it would be to trade the second pick overall. Well, here you go, a couple first picks overall. So, that was my reaction was if they can do it, certainly the Eagles can do it. I don't think there's anything imminent. I don't think it's going to happen overnight, but it's there and it's a possibility. And if you really, really want to do it, you can work through all the other contingencies and make it happen.
Yeah, so it was Goff, a couple first-round picks, and I think a third-rounder for Matt Stafford, who's clearly the better player. The Rams are looking at it right now thinking, the Rams are looking at it like, we're going to try to win
also
right now.
32. I mean, that's, he's a lot older than Goff too.
Yeah, but he's a lot better. So
no, I agree. I agree he's a lot better. He's never really had a good team around him. But he's also 32. It's a lot to give up for a guy who, is – at the end of his prime, or, I mean, you never know with quarterbacks. Heck, I mean, you look at Breeze and Rivers and these guys, and Stafford's been really durable, but he is 32. You know, he is 5 years older than Goff. It's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, and look, I think Detroit got a good return based on the fact that everyone knows they were going to trade him. You know, I mean, that's not easy to do, but the Rams are getting a really good quarterback, and they're going to try to win in 2021, and I think they have a real chance to do that. It's tough because when you're talking about Carson Wentz, you're really focusing more on the Goff part of this trade than the Stafford, so it's really hard to kind of isolate the Goff segment of it because Stafford's obviously the bigger part of it, you know? But there are a lot of similarities between Goff and Wentz, and obviously they were 1-2 in 2016. They both got contract extensions in 2019, and
Goff had their best years in 17 and 18.
Yeah, Goff was a little more tradable. I think he accounts for like $22 million in dead cap space, whereas Wentz would account for $33 million. The 22 is already a record, so Wentz would smash that, but it kind of shows that it's possible. It's not ideal to have that kind of dead cap space for one player, but I always look at, I don't know if it really changes much in actuality for the Eagles, but I think it proves that, hey, these kind of things can happen. And even though we've never really seen a trade quite like this one, the fact that it happens opens your eyes to thinking, yeah, I mean, if the Eagles land on, hey, we have to trade him, they can get it done.
Yeah, I think Goff has more value. I really wonder what Wentz's trade value is coming off this year.
I mean, Do you think he has more value?
I'm sorry?
Do you think he has more value? I don't think so.
I think so, just because, I mean, he was still okay this past year. I mean, he wasn't up to his best years in 17 and 18, but, I mean, Carson wasn't. I mean, he was – and I think Carson was so bad that people on the outside are going to wonder – I mean, there's no doubt in my mind Jared Goff can be a decent quarterback in Detroit and he'll be okay. He'll be a functional starting quarterback. I don't think he's a great player. I never did. But I do have those questions about Carson. I think everybody who watched him play has those questions. So I don't know. I don't know what his value is. I don't know if anyone knows. I guess Howie knows it to some extent from talking to people. But he was so bad this year. So historically bad, and his decline was so staggering and his incompetence so overwhelming. I just don't know. Without knowing, you know, without other teams knowing exactly why he was that bad, you know, how much value he'll have.
I still think he has more value than Goff because I think his ceiling is still higher. I think you look at Carson Wentz, I think at least other teams will look at him like, if we can get this guy and fix this guy, he can be a top 10 quarterback. Whereas I don't know if Jared Goff at his best is that.
At his best, he was a top 10 quarterback. I think in 17 and 18, he was probably a top 10 quarterback. I mean, just physically, Carson Wentz's stature makes him, you know, I think more of a long-term intriguing prospect. I mean, Jared Goff just physically – you know, I just don't see him. I mean, he doesn't really have – never had great arm strength, but he's not a big guy. From that standpoint, I would agree. But I don't – I mean, we haven't seen a quarterback play this poorly in a long time, you know. So I just don't know what teams are thinking. Now, there might be six teams out there that look at Carson Wentz and say, you know, if they can just protect him and he can just, you know, get rid of the ball quicker, this guy's going to be a Pro Bowler. So maybe it's that simple. Maybe some teams are going to see it that, you know – they're going to kind of, you know, whittle it down to just a couple things that they can fix, and certainly plenty of tape on them. I don't know. I don't know if it's that simple, you know, and you know, these teams certainly evaluate quarterbacks for a living more than I do, but I just don't know how fixable he is. And I'm sure there's teams out there that look at Carson and start counting up all the different ways that he was messed up this year and say, you know, no, we're not going to – I don't want to take that on. So I don't know. I don't know how tradable – I mean, I think he's tradable, but I don't know as far as value what you're going to get back.
Yeah, and it's tough because had Goff been traded for picks or pick, we'd kind of have a baseline of value, but we don't because it's so convoluted because of the Stafford part of it.
Yeah.
But look, I think there was interest in Goff. There were some reports that no, Detroit, like they really wanted Jared Goff. It wasn't like he was a throw in this deal. And I think it was NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah said, you know, some GMs he's talked to would be interested in Carson Wentz if he becomes available in a trade. And I think that's the key. I think if the Eagles and we're getting ahead of ourselves because look, I still think it's in the Eagles' best interest to resolve things with Carson Wentz. But if they get to the point where he says, you got to trade me, then they have to trade him. Well, at that point, you need more than one team. You need some leverage. And I think that there would be multiple teams. So I think that would really help them in how much value they'd get back for him. Would it be a one? Probably not. Maybe a two. I think a two is possible. And at that point, you would take it because I don't know if you're going to get much higher than that.
Yeah, I agree. And it might be a two in something else. It's funny, though, because you wonder, like, and again, we haven't talked to Carson in a couple months, I guess, since after the Packers game. What exactly is his issue with the franchise? Because you got rid of the head coach, so – does his if he's still got issues, if he still doesn't want to be here, then the implication, you know, maybe he's just mad because they got rid of Press Taylor. But I mean, come on, grow up. Coaches come and go. You know, if he still doesn't want to be here, then the implication is his issues with the owner or the GM or Don Swilinski. With the owner or the GM. Now, I can't imagine what issue you have the owner who's paying him $100 million. So, you know, does it come down to he's upset that how he didn't get him Justin Jefferson or DK Metcalf? Hard to imagine, but my thing has always been if a player doesn't want to be here, then you accommodate him, and if you can, you get rid of him. It's the last thing you want is a guy on your team that doesn't want to be here, especially a quarterback. So
yeah, you need your quarterback to buy in.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder when we'll hear from Carson. I wonder – you can't really hold it against him that he has. I mean, he doesn't owe that to anybody. But man, if people were saying all this crap about me, I'd be like, wait a minute. I'd at least tweet something out and say, you know, hey, I want to be here or, you know, something. But he hasn't.
Yeah. I mean, and it might be because he's not sure if he wants to be here. And you didn't mention it. I mean, the obvious thing to me, and this is speculation, of course, but if there is some bad feelings there, it might stem from the Jalen Hurts pick, which would be a pretty obvious source of some unhappiness. And I think that would be justified in on some level, but maybe not to this extent. I still think they have to try to work it out, but you're right. I mean, if I wrote this about a week ago that it's kind of in Carson Wentz's court now because they got rid of Doug Peterson. They brought a new coach in who, you know, should be able to help him. And they brought in an exciting young quarterbacks coach. They were never going to keep Press Taylor. So if that's what Carson had in his mind, that's on him because it was pretty clear that Press was gone. So it's on him now. I mean, he has to decide if he thinks it can work. And the scary thing is if he's not all in, then you get in a situation where like in a month, he says, all right, let's make it work. And then a month in, he's like, no, it's not working. I still don't want to be here. And you've wasted time, and now I don't know how much the value will hurt.
What does it tell you? And again, we're speculating, but if this is all about you guys drafted Jalen Hurts, you know, my feelings are hurt. I mean, what does that say about Carson Wentz? And again, we made the Aaron Rodgers comparison. He's accomplished a lot more. And they drafted a quarterback, and he went out and had an MVP season. And he's done a lot more than Carson Wentz, obviously. So, you know, and that was a first-round pick. So, you know, I can see being pissed about it when it happens, but, I mean, how long are you going to hold that grudge? You can't function in the NFL like that because stuff's going to happen that you don't like, you know, and you can't just fold the tents every time that happens.
Yeah, and I'm sure
to be a competitor.
Yeah, I get all that. I wonder how much of it has to do with this season. It looked like a lot of the and a lot of it was external, but the blame was placed on him, and it was so tough to play the and everyone played the blame game this year. And I don't think he had the team around him to be successful, and he didn't help matters, of course. And I think that's some of the accountability issues with him that we've seen over the years, quite frankly, is that he hasn't been able to acknowledge when his shortcomings are there, because he, a really good quarterback would have covered up a lot of the problems with the team this year. I don't know. It's really fascinating. And it's hard to imagine that we're in this position with this guy who, I mean, from day one, they fell in love with this kid from North Dakota State. They went through all the process of vetting him and then trading up to get him. So to now be in this situation where you're like, I don't even know if the relationship is salvageable. Man, how the hell did that happen? But back to his value, no one thought the Eagles could get a first-round pick for Sam Bradford either until a team was desperate and stupid enough to trade for him.
Well, desperate. I mean, they were desperate. They didn't have anybody, and you know, they had an injury situation. The season was about to start, and Sam Bradford, you know, for some reason, and he had been the. I think he was the first overall pick. He had been a Heisman runner up. I guess Hurts was as well. Did he win the Heisman? I don't know. But I mean, he was. I guess he wasn't more – was he more accomplished than Carson? I mean, they were kind of similar. I mean, they put up decent numbers. Neither one had ever won anything. Bradford still never even made the playoffs. At least Carson got to a playoffs for three plays. But
I mean, it was tough because Bradford was on just a god-awful team.
Bradford played better in 15 than Carson played in 20.
That's fair. But, I mean – Carson also had a higher peak.
Yeah. But people looked at – I mean, a lot of people gave Sam Bradford a lot of money and thought he was – you know, there was something special there. We never saw it, but teams did. I don't know. I don't think they'll get a one for Carson, Sam Bradford notwithstanding. The irony being that Sam Bradford's – when they got the one for him, it gave Carson's chance to play. Just think how – I mean, if – I mean, so much could have been different if that never happened and injury never happened and Bradford never got traded. Carson wouldn't have been the opening day quarterback at 16. Who knows? Maybe Bradford has a career year. Has anybody made more money than Sam Bradford without ever doing anything?
No.
Like not fame, just all in the contract. World. Yeah. Like in the history of the world.
he was – and he got in right before the rookie wage scale too. So he made that huge rookie contract. He was the last guy to cash in like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Enough about Sam Bradford.
Well, Carson, if he does stick around, he made your list of five players who could benefit from the new coaching staff. I think he's a pretty obvious one. He didn't get along with the last head coach. Naturally, someone could come in and bring that talent out of him. But let's go through some of the other names on the list. Who else was on there?
Yeah, it's always interesting to me how there's always players that kind of blossom under, you know, with a new coach, and you've seen it a few times, you know, a lot of times here. My favorite example that I give people is Brian Dawkins, who played 3 years under Ray Rhodes and Emmett Thomas as his D coordinator. And he was a pretty good player, but he never made a Pro Bowl. He wasn't a special player. He was a good player. But as soon as Andy Reid got here and brought in Jim Johnson, it just clicked for him. He became a Hall of Famer and very quickly made his first Pro Bowl in his fourth season, his first season under Jim. So circumstances change. Players respond. Sometimes they don't. But, my number one guy who could benefit from the coaching change is Miles Sanders for obvious reasons. He just didn't have a coach that believed in running the ball. And, you know, from everything we know about Nick and where he comes from, I mean, Frank Reich was the offensive coordinator here when, you know, I think he was the running game yin to Doug's throwing the ball yang, and Doug listened to him. And even though Doug was calling the plays in 17, you know, Jay Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount were a huge part of what they did. They've run the ball in Indianapolis significantly more than they have here underdog. So, you know, it's like almost four carries a game in the years since Frank went to Indianapolis over just with running back plays. So you give Miles Sanders four more carries a game, and all of a sudden he goes from 13 carries to 17 carries, and all of a sudden you're getting the value and the production that you're expecting from him. I mean, 13 carries a game for a guy with that talent is just, you know, it's irresponsible coaching. So I think he's the number one guy that's going to benefit from it.
And I want to kind of mention too that one of the staples we've seen from Sirianni is being able to utilize his running backs out of the backfield. And that was a part of Miles Sanders' game that obviously took a hit last year, but he has that potential. And that's one thing I think that we can kind of bank on Sirianni coming in here and doing is getting a lot out of his backs when they leave the backfield as receivers, finding some open space for them. He'll be able to scheme that up. Whereas like last year it was like, oh, well, teams are now covering Miles Sanders differently. He's just not a weapon in the pass game. I think Sirianni's going to have a lot of stress. He's going to really stress finding ways to get Miles Sanders the ball in space as opposed to just hoping.
I think part of that was his fault. He had so many drops. And I think part of it was the O-line's injuries just because they couldn't run screens just because of the injuries. They didn't have the personnel to run screens. Like when you have Brandon Brooks at guard, you can, you know, and Kelsey and Lane, I mean, you can run a screen, but with, you know, Jamone Brown and, you know, Matt.
Yeah, but it wasn't just screens. It's like the wheel route and.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I agree. I'm just saying that's part of it. I think that was a part of his decline. I mean, the guy caught 50 balls 2 years ago and he should be a 50 catch guy every year. So I totally agree. I just think that was part of it. But another guy, and I'm not going to go through all of them, but another guy I thought was that could benefit greatly is Derek Barnett. Tracy Rocker is the guy, you know, I think we can all agree, and we disagree a little bit on Derek Barnett, but he's underachieved for a 14th pick. He's been hurt. He's missed games each year. He's got 19 and a half sacks in 4 years. And Tracy Rocker is a guy who comes in with a great reputation. He'll be Derek Barnett's fourth position coach in 5 years, fourth in the last 4 years as well. You know, he's an SEC guy. He was an incredible college player who's kind of a highly regarded, experienced. I mean, he's the second oldest coach on the staff behind Stout. And he's been around and he's, you know, he's not just starting out as a D-line coach. So I think if Derek Barnett's ever going to – and we don't know – I mean, we don't know that he'll be here either. But I kind of think they're going to agree on some kind of – long-term deal that makes sense for both sides. I don't think Derek Barnett has a ton of leverage. I don't think he's got a ton of value on the open market. So I think they'll give him a fair deal on a long-term deal. And he's not going to play under the 10-year tender. We all know that. But if he is here, I think Tracy Rocker's a guy that can bring more out of him than we've seen. I think there's a good chance of that.
Yeah, we disagree on Barnett because I think the injuries have been the biggest factor for him. I think he's been a pretty good player when he's on the field, an underrated player. But, yeah, he's certainly not going to get paid $10 million this year. So we'll see. I mean, maybe they just don't like that's the one thing. You just don't know what the new coaches are going to think about some of these players who are already here. Like maybe they're going to look at Derek Barnett and be like, no, we don't – he doesn't really fit what we want and we want to move on, which is possible.
But, I mean, I think we all – can see that there's something there. I mean, we can all see that. I mean, you see flashes of Derek Barnett, you're like, wow, this guy should be a 13, 15 sack guy. We just haven't seen it. And I'm sure part of it's the injuries, but when he's been healthy, I mean, again, he's got 3.5 fewer sacks than Mike Mamula after 4 seasons. Not that Mike Mamula was the worst player ever, but you know, if that's the standard, you know, you want to at least be above Mike Mamula. So he's underachieved, but I think that, gosh, if I'm Tracy Rocker and I'm watching film and I see Derek Barnett, I'm like, I want to coach this guy. I don't want to get rid of him. But we'll see. Could be right. And Josh Sweat, you know, we'll see with him as well. And just a couple more. I mean, I put Rager and Fulgham both on the list for slightly different reasons. I think Fulgham, you know, if I'm a head coach who's a wide receiver coach and I see the 5 games that he played where he produced big time, I feel like there's something there. And maybe he got in Doug Peterson's doghouse pretty fast. His reps went down. He had some drops. But there's something there. And usually if a guy produces at some point, you know, you know that there's a way to get him to do it again. Not always, but usually. And having a wide receiver head coach with that background, a new coordinator, he'll have the same position coach. But I think he'll have a chance to maybe not be that, you know, a 80 yards a game guy, but to be a functional player, consistent week to week, which is what you really need from him. So I think it'll help him. And Jalen Reagor, I mean, he's a guy that for 100 reasons looked like he needed kind of a fresh look as well. He just never looked comfortable, never looked, you know, he never looked like he could transfer that speed, you know, whether it was really 4.47 or 4.22 that he supposedly ran his pro day. He never looked like he could run, but he could run. He just couldn't get open. So he's got a lot of work to do. And he's a guy, to me, that a coaching change could certainly bring out more. I mean, usually that jump from year one to year two is big anyway. So, you know, I think having Nick and having Aaron Moorhead for another year, I think will help him.
Yeah, Moorhead's back, reportedly back. So we know most of the staff at this point. The only major one we're waiting for is running backs coach. And who knows, maybe by the time you guys are listening to this, we'll know that one too. The most recent ones, we learned Aaron Moorhead will be back, according to Jeff Mosher. New linebackers coach, Nick Rallis, I believe I pronounced that correctly, a young guy, according to Mike Kay of NJ.com, the 27-year-old, linebackers coach.
Alex Singleton.
Pretty crazy. And then Jay Valai, we don't know what his title will be. Maybe cornerbacks or safety, some kind of defensive back coach under Denard Wilson.
It could be quality control. We don't really know. I mean, they already have a D-backs coach, a really young staff. And, yeah, I mean, Nick Rallis, ours pronounces it to me. You know, most of these guys are young, but they've got a lot of experience. Because, you know, this is not a staff of – like a lot of the previous coaches played a long time in the league, so they were older by the time they started coaching. These guys didn't play in the league, and so a lot of them started coaching when they're 23, 24 as entry-level guys. You know, so they have a lot of experience. But, I mean, this is a guy who was playing college football 4 years ago. So, and he did a year as a grad assistant at Wake Forest and then went to work with under Mike Zimmer in Minnesota. And it's an interesting hire because he's so young and has so little experience. And it's unusual. And I don't know how to look this up, but, you know, Pro Football Reference, you can't search age of coaches, unfortunately. But he's got to be the youngest position coach. I'm gonna look back. I can go back at least when I started covering the team, but which is half of the team's existence.
You beat me there.
But yeah, I can go back and look and see. But I can't remember ever a position coach. And it's something we can ask Ray D if he remembers somebody back like in the 30s or 40s. But so you can make fun of me, and I can make fun of Ray. It's extraordinary to have a you know, the special teams coach is 29. It's a concern. I mean, it's a concern for, you know, the lack of experience, but also these guys are the same age as the guys they're coaching. And, you know, I don't know how, you know, you need players that are open to coaching, and I don't know how they're going to respond to that, but it's up to Nick Sirianni to, you know, to make sure these guys respect their coaches no matter how old they are and take on coaching. Is, you know, you can have good coaches that are young. It's unusual. Most guys work their way up, and you know, and there's a couple older guys on the staff, but I mean, the most experienced coach is Jason Michaels, who's been in the league 15 years. He's got the most NFL experience on the staff.
You just pulled a classic Philly faux pas.
What did I do?
You added the S to his last name.
Jason Michaels, Phillies. Jason Michael. Yeah, I'm going to make that mistake a lot. Yeah. But yeah, it's different. It's unusual. And, you know, they got the one veteran line coach on either side, you know, Rocker and Stout. Ideally, you'd like to have, and again, he could still add like an assistant head coach or, you know, he could add an older guy. He could do whatever he wants, but right now it's kind of shocking how young this staff is.
Yeah, I can't remember ever seeing a coaching staff quite like this. There have been younger staffs, but is there almost everyone is, I mean, there's only four guys over the age of 40 out of what, 12 that we know so far.
And two of them are holdovers.
Yeah.
So out of his 10, eight out of his 10 are 30 or younger, in their 30s or younger.
Yeah. I was joking that Aaron Moorhead's 40, and he probably told Nick Sirianni he hadn't had his birthday yet. He's like, no, I'm still 39.
He put 39 on his resume.
You can keep me.
it's an interesting challenge. And
I don't think you want to get carried away with how much it means, but I think there is something to it where, you know, if you're a veteran player and you're a 30-year-old guy and you're looking at your position coach, he's the same age as you, I mean – I think that there's, you have to respect them. And I think that the way a 32-year-old coach goes about gaining respect from players is probably different than a 52-year-old coach. I think that's just kind of natural. I don't really know how that'll end up playing out, but I think there's at least a little bit of a level of concern there.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And interesting that, you know, the two areas where the Eagles are the oldest are the O-line and D-line, and those are where the older coaches are. So I'm not sure if that's intentional or if it even means anything, but it's interesting to note. This is your dream vacation, Eagles fans. The Philadelphia Eagles fan cruise. Tickets are selling out fast, and the ship sails just over a year from now, March of 2022, for 7 days and seven nights. Sail in the seas with Eagles fans and only Eagles fans. Book your tickets today at PhiladelphiaEaglesCruise.com.
I know my parents are missing. They're the cruise people. They're like the old cruise couple, and they can't. They've my poor mom keeps like rescheduling these cruises and rescheduling them. But hopefully, in a year, they'll be able to go on one, and all the Eagles fans will be able to go on that cruise.
Maybe they could go on the Eagles fan cruise.
I don't know if that'd be my mom's. My dad would probably like. I don't know if my mom would be okay with that.
I know Ben's working on having us do live podcasts every day on the cruise.
Yeah. Doug Peterson, it looks like he's going to sit this year out. His coaching staff, some of them are finding jobs. Some of them aren't. I mean, the ones we know, Deuce Staley is in Detroit. Dave Phipp is in Detroit. Justin Peel is in Atlanta. It sounds like Matt Burke is getting an interview somewhere. So they're finding jobs, but not all of them. And all of them probably aren't going to find jobs just because of how late that firing happened.
Yeah, and how late it happened and the fact that Doug isn't coaching this year. I think if Doug – I mean, I don't even know if Doug had said from the get-go that, you know, he wanted to be a head coach in 2021. I don't know if he would have gotten a job. I just don't know. Usually if a coach does, he brings a bunch of his coaches with him. But yeah, there's a lot of these guys, you know, Marquand Manuel and, you know, Andrew Briner and Rich Scangarello and Marty Morningwig and Matthew Tate, you know, there's all these guys that, are kind of in limbo right now. And
well, Rich Scangarello got one. He's going back to San Francisco.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. My bad. But yeah, I mean, a lot of these guys are, and you know, some of them are older guys. Ken Flagel is 66. I don't know if he wants to coach again. Has he said anything about that? I don't know. But there's
well,
some.
Remember, he was gone before Doug was fired.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
There was a good chance he's just retiring.
Yeah. Dino Vasso. I mean, there's guys that have been here a long time that fans don't really hear about, but. You know, I mean, we joke about Carson Walsh. I mean, he's a young guy. He was wide receivers coach of an NFL team. And as far as I know, he didn't even work this past year. I don't think he had a job anywhere. So some of them are going to go to college. I mean, I think about Roy Segrist, you know, who he was a coach here for a long time. And, you know, what's the division? He's at like some division NAI school or something, Alabama State. I don't know.
I came across Roy's name a while back for a story, and I don't remember which story it was.
But it's a tough life, and it's really a tough position. It's hard enough when you're on a, you know, with a team where the coach gets fired, and you know, Chip staff. I mean, Doug kept a lot of those guys, but generally, you know, you're scrambling, and when it happens this late. You know, it could be really tough to find a job. And, you know, to go from the NFL where everything's first class to, you know, maybe go to a college job where, you know, your salary might be, you know, half as much and your benefits might not be as good. And, you know, you got to find a new place to live every year. And it's a tough life. And other than the very top guys, you know, it's a year to year type of thing. And it's not easy.
Yeah, no, you're totally right.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Nick Sirianni had his press conference with us on Friday. Since then, he did a one-on-one with John Clark. He did a WIP morning show with Angelo Cataldi. Much more comfortable in both. I just think that first press conference was such a weird situation. He was clearly nervous. I think the fact that he did it through Zoom to have a guy stand at a lectern in an empty auditorium and talk to a bunch of little boxes on a screen, I think it was really unfair for people to draw conclusions from it. And since then, look, we haven't gotten any more answers on important questions. He's handled himself much better. And I think that that's a good sign, at least.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any question. I mean, I watched a press conference he did, or a Zoom call he did in Indy last year, and I mean, he was fine. You know, it was a combination of a lot of things, and he never had a chance to prepare for it, really. You know, he was on vacation when he got the job, and scrambled up here and started putting his staff together again when most staffs were already put together or well into the process, and all of a sudden, in the middle of that, you're talking to a bunch of strangers in an empty auditorium looking at a camera. He was nervous. It happens. And I don't think that has anything to do with what kind of coach he is and the success he'll have here. But I'm glad he took the next step and talked to Clarke and talked to Ange. And I think he's in a tough position because there's not a lot he can say about Carson. I mean, these decisions haven't been made. And same with Jalen. I mean, the decisions haven't been made. They don't have, they don't have to make a decision imminently. So they can go through the process and evaluate things. And I don't know what he could have said that would have made people, feel better. You know, like, Carson's our quarter. He can't say that. We're definitely trading. He can't say that. So he's going to be an expert at avoiding the question. And that's something you have to be to have success here.
It's true. I think it was fun to hear him kind of open up a little bit more, and hopefully we get to know him a little bit better. And the whole Zoom thing is tough, you know, having to talk to this guy you're meeting him and you're like, hey there, box on a computer screen. It's nice to meet you. But hopefully at some point in the summer, we'll be able to meet him in person. This isn't on our budget here, but I wanted to mention, I got a chance to talk to Rodney McLeod about Denard Wilson, the Eagles' new defensive backs coach. Kind of a crazy story. They both went to DeMatha Catholic in Maryland, and Wilson actually coached Rodney in high school. He was like in the league for a brief cup of coffee, goes back to DeMatha, coaches for a couple years before starting his ascent in the coaching world. And then he coaches him again in St. Louis, where he becomes a defensive backs coach in Rodney's last year. So this is the third time Rodney McLeod will be playing for Denard Wilson.
Yeah, it's funny how that worked out. And DeMatha is kind of known as a basketball powerhouse, right? I mean, they were, they're always like top 10, like back when USA Today, like Shawnee would always be like number 17. DeMatha was always like number 3. I think a lot of NBA players from DeMatha, but yeah, it's pretty cool. Hopefully Rodney's healthy and is here and is playing for him. we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, it's kind of cool how it worked out.
Yeah, he said he's ACL rehabs. I didn't write about it, but he said it's going well so far, hitting all the check marks. That's all it is when these rehabs just hit all the check marks. I heard Lane Johnson on Chris Long's podcast say that he's finally off the scooter, so his ankle rehab's going well. There, a lot of these guys are relying on coming back from injuries and older guys, so you'd like to see that kind of a mix because we know there's going to be a lot of change this year with the team, and they're going to have to get younger, but you can't just throw away the veterans either. You need to be competitive this year, and you're going to need those guys to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how many of those guys are, you know, are ready to go. I mean, who knows if there's going to be OTAs, but by training camp, and Lane and Brandon, I mean, I think Brandon will be fine. It's been so, I mean, it was such an early injury. But Lane's the one that can, that's the one that really concerns me the most, just because it's been such a long grind with that, and he just keeps getting hurt, and he's already had a surgery. So, yeah, we'll see. He seems pretty optimistic, so, but he has before as well. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. They need Lane, and they need Brandon Brooks, and you know, they need to be healthy.
I think this is a good time to remind people to please go ahead and rate and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy Eagle Eye, and if you're watching on YouTube, click like, hit subscribe for us. We appreciate all your feedback. You got anything else, Drew, before we wrap this up?
No, we got a Super Bowl coming up Sunday. How about on our next pod, we'll talk some Super Bowl?
Yeah, that sounds good. And maybe we'll even throw on some Hawaiian shirts and honor a Big Red as he has a style.
We'll wear Hawaiian shirts for our next pod.
Yeah, I have one. Do you have one?
I did at one point. I'm not sure. I think I might.
Well, you have 2 days to find it, and that'll be the big unveil on Thursday. Everyone, take care. Stay safe. If you're out there shoveling, we'll talk to you soon.